Well, thank you very much. And I thank Csaba and the other organizers for inviting me to talk at this workshop. This talk is going to be very different from the others in the morning session, because I'm not going to talk about Beyond the Standard Model. In fact, I guess what I'd like to do is to talk for just a little about the thing that's become my obsession in the last year or so, which is this question of understanding the standard model backgrounds to new physics, and in particular the shape of complicated events that one expects from the standard model at the LHC. So maybe I should just go ahead and show these two slides. Jay showed this slide yesterday of the D0 search for supersymmetry, and I also like to show this famous slide from the run-2 D0 analysis of the top quark. In both of these cases, the ability to discover new physics has to do with understanding standard model backgrounds as a function of missing energy, PT, jet multiplicity, and in particular, the new physics appears in regions that are down on the tails of these steeply falling distributions. And so the worry that I have, and I think probably one that's fairly general in the community, is, well, of course, when we see data from the LHC, there will always be bumps on the tails of those distributions. And how are we going to know whether that's new physics, whether it's a detector effect? I think we have to trust our experimental colleagues. But whether the standard model produces that, I think the burden is on the theory community, and we better have some intuition for that. And of course, the problem is that this is exactly the region that is treated poorly by standard Parton-Shower algorithms. Parton-Shower algorithms are basically optimized to collinear emissions, and so when you have emissions at large angles that populate these tails, those programs are necessarily doing badly. And so it's no wonder that there's been a lot of interest in this in the past few years. Many people have thought about how exactly you merge Parton showers, which are good for collinear emissions at relatively small PT, with exact QCD calculations that refer to the hardest jets. And so just to talk about a lot of people who have looked at this, there are many approaches to this problem, and maybe all with somewhat different ambitions. Probably the professional tools are these that incorporate explicit high-order matrix elements and then do what's called matching. That is, you create a multi-jet final state with an explicit matrix element. You then remove those events that you've generated that are very likely to be generated by a Parton shower, and then you hook it up to Pythia or Herwig, and you generate the Parton shower, and in that way get, hopefully, a complete description of the event. And that's now a sophisticated art, and it's a tool which is absolutely essential to the current generation of particle searches at the Tevatron. Something else that you might like to do, which is slightly different but clearly related, is to incorporate exact one-loop calculations into your Monte Carlo. So that's the program of MC at NLO. Another recent approach, which is very interesting, is the improvement of Parton-Shower algorithms using QCD resummation and soft and collinear effective theory. And Matthew Schwartz, I think, has described that at this workshop, and there's some recent very interesting work with Matthew Schwartz and Thomas Becker. So the twist on this that I'm interested in is not so much to try and solve the whole problem or to try and build something that's extremely accurate, but really more to try and bring some ideas that can help to build a toy that people in the theory community, and maybe I should say me, can use for estimation. And so I'd like to answer this question. Can one write a Parton-Shower algorithm that can systematically incorporate QCD tree amplitudes in its structure so that the N-jet emission automatically has the shape of the N-jet, the N-Parton tree amplitude? And so this is a rather modest goal compared to the ones on the previous slide, but On the other hand, it's potentially something that you can carry around in your personal computer, and maybe it would even be useful in terms of trying to figure out whether things that are in the data are likely or not to appear from the standard model. Now, I should point out there are other people who are interested in this who are frankly much further along than we are. I think Christian Bauer gave a talk already in the workshop, and so with Jesse Thaler and Frank Tackman, they have a beautiful program called Geneva, and here is a slide from their talk. Hila, Kossauer, and Scans have maybe not attacked this precise problem, but they've also been rewriting the form of parton showers. They have a tool called Vincia, and here's, for example, the thrust distribution from Vincia. So let me talk a little about what we've been doing. And so this is some work that I've been doing with some students at Slack, John Conley and Tomo Wazansky. And so mainly the talk will be about the ideas that are in this code, then at the end I'll show some very, very preliminary results from it. So there are three issues that you have to discuss. The first is, how do you rapidly produce exact QCD amplitudes? The second is that if you have an exact QCD amplitude, it has to be integrated over exact phase space. And so what's a convenient way to write phase space exactly so that you know where you are when you're doing this kind of reweighting? And then the third thing is that when you reweight and have acceptance rejection in a parton shower, there's some subtlety to that. And so we also ought to think about that question. And so in this talk, I'm going to discuss answers to these questions very specifically in the context of a final state shower. Let me choose the process Higgs to end gluon as a very concrete example. And then in the end, I'll show you some results of the code that comes from this kind of thinking. So first of all, if you want to have incorporating in your parton shower exact tree amplitudes, you would better be able to produce exact tree amplitudes with some kind of godlike efficiency. And so you want to think about the Higgs going to four gluons, five, six, well, however far you can go, you'll make an improvement. And so something that I find very useful for that is this Brito-Cachazzo-Feng on-shell recursion relation, which I guess Svi discussed and other people have discussed earlier in the week. So that is an equation that relates an on-shell amplitude to other two on-shell amplitudes obtained by dividing the diagram in half and then evaluating those amplitudes as some well-chosen values, complex, analytically continued values of the momenta. Svi in his talk emphasized that there are all kinds of subtleties with using this approach when you go to the one loop level. But at the tree level, there are very, very few subtleties. In fact, you can just kind of implement this and it works. It's really quite amazing. Especially if you're only interested in an estimation tool, you might think that you should only work to the leading order in n color. So then you only need to write color order tree amplitudes, and then this thing can just crank away. So for the case of Higgs to n gluon decays, there's a result that when all the gluons have positive helicity, there's a known formula, so-called MHV formula, derived by Dixon, Glover, and Jose, which is extremely simple. These angle things are the spinner products that appear in QCD calculations. So roughly the square of the denominator is the square of the sub-energies in all of the neighboring channels in a color-ordered diagram. That structure is generic to color-ordered amplitudes, and it'll actually be important as we continue this discussion. And then this particular result's very simple. You just divide by that denominator and put m Higgs to the fourth in the numerator, and that's the exact result. And so then you can imagine that you write a code where you take an arbitrary amplitude, which is color ordered with arbitrary helicities. You divide it recursively until you get down to this structure, and then you just plug in that answer and you're done. And so now a number of people have investigated in practice how to do this. Maltoni and some of the MadGraph collaborators have looked at this. In particular, Weinserl and his group have written very, very fast codes that go up to huge numbers of gluons. Actually, it turns out that if you're a professional, this method is not optimal. There's something older called Behrens-Kieler recursion, which actually wins when you get to 9, 10 gluons. The beauty of BCF, though, is that you can write an extremely simple code, one that basically contains no formulae except the one that I wrote on the previous slide, and it works. Our code is not as fast as Weinzierl's, but we can compute Higgs to 8 gluon amplitudes in a tenth of a millisecond. And so for a parton shower, that's actually adequate. This is not the limiting speed in what I'll describe. There's some fun C++ programming involved. The basic object is a bispinner that contains 8 complex numbers, which I've written up here. The crucial thing when you use BCF is not to lose the phase information. And so the trick turns out to be to obtain, for example, one of these spinner components with an arbitrary phase, then basically preserve that phase when you construct the other spinner components. Then this spinner object has enough phase information that it will do the recursion correctly. And so I guess with that understanding, and as I've said here, with idea that you should manage memory in a sensible way, it's really very easy to write something that's very fast. In reality, the bispinner is replaced by something called a cone class. You should think of this as the light cone where the light-like vectors come from, where you write to that, and once you've written to that, you read off of that. And here I just have a calculation of the jet energies in E plus E minus goes to 6 partons, just as an illustration that you can actually do this thing and get the right answer. So now that you have some machine that rapidly generates for you tree amplitudes, the next thing to do is to integrate them over phase space. And to do this, what you need is to efficiently generate multi-particle phase space, and hopefully you should generate multi-particle phase space with enhancement in the region where the QCD denominators are large. So there's a very neat way to do this, which was invented by Dragiotis, Van Hameren, and Kleiss. And it goes under the name of SARGE. Kleiss is an inventor of the algorithm called RAMBO that generates flat multiparticle phase space. And actually with Steve Ellis, who might be here. And that's a beautiful idea. RAMBO actually generate points in multiparticle phase space, unfortunately without the QCD enhancement, with basically no rejection. You throw 3 complex numbers, you get a point. You throw that for n particles, you rescale something, and you get a uniformly distributed sample in phase space. So they were trying to emulate that for phase space enhanced in the regions that are important for QCD. And it works, actually. So here's the algorithm. You start with 2 back-to-back light-like vectors. You choose as the variables the Surikoff variables. That is, you write P3 for a third vector is some fraction of P1 plus a fraction of P2. And then you add a transverse component so that this now becomes a light-like vector. And now you have a 3-body system. So now you boost and rescale so that that 3-body system comes back to the original center of mass energy. So in a parton shower, there's always this question. You have to do something ad hoc because you generate a parton as a radiation, but then that doesn't conserve energy. So then you have to do something to the event so that the event recoils against the emission. And this kind of prescription will have the whole event recoil, but in such a way that when you're in the soft and collinear region, not very much happens to the event, so then it's reasonable to do things in this way. So then when you have more vectors, you just repeat this procedure. If you want to go from 3 to 4, for example, you would randomly pick which pair of these vectors is responsible for the radiation, boost those 2 guys back, add a 4th vector in the way that I've described, and then again boost and rescale the whole event so so that it conserves energy momentum. Now, what is incredibly cool about this is that this is actually an exact parametrization of phase space. So the following formula is correct. If you think about adding a particle, and then you have the QCD denominators associated with that particle becoming collinear with the two particles in the antenna that radiated, this is an identity. And then you can insert as many particles as you want. So phase space times the QCD denominator is exactly represented by this expression. And so this is real simple. Logarithmic integrals over the two variables C, a uniform integral over phi, some known factors. There's only one subtlety, which is that I didn't tell you what the limits of integration here are. And so what you need to do is to integrate over these variables in such a way that phase space is exactly covered once. And so that's something that we still have to implement. But as far as the measure on phase space goes, this is an exact representation, and obviously it's very useful. Actually, it's even more useful, as I'll point out in a couple of slides. So now, as I say, we have to integrate over this in such a way that every point in phase space appears exactly once. And in the paper of Dragiotis, Van Hameren, and Kleiss, what they suggested is that we go through in a color-ordered amplitude and add the successive vectors in color order. And that, I guess, maybe I didn't understand what they did, but when we tried this, it didn't work very well. The values of C that you need for some phase-based configurations grow very large. But there's an alternative approach, which is to basically randomly pick which set of neighboring vectors are going to get the next emission. And then you define a series of chambers in the phase space. And so we'll define those chambers in such a way that when you basically add over all the chambers, then you get pieces, and those pieces should come together seamlessly and tile the phase space. And in fact, it's pretty easy to figure out how to do that. So for example, if I have an n-particle configuration like this, what I can choose to do is to radiate, again, between this vector and that vector. This is what David Kossauer and his group call an antenna. We'll choose a chamber by saying that S, this extra vector here, radiates off 1 if this subenergy is the smallest subenergy as you go around the color-ordered amplitude. And then there's one more restriction that you have to put to get uniqueness, which is that it's a radiation from this line into this antenna rather than a radiation from this line into that antenna if this subenergy here is less than this subenergy here. So that prescription now, which you can consider, you apply iteratively as you do the emissions, defines a unique chamber, and then these chambers all fit together, and as a whole, they tile the n-dimensional phase space. Now, what's very nice about doing things this, and then that puts upper limits, which are basically of order 1, but unfortunately, they're not something that you compute exactly. You have to actually throw points, and sometimes you reject points because these inequalities are not satisfied. But basically, then all the upper limits on the C1 and C2 integrals stay to be of order 1, and the lower limits are being set by your infrared cutoff. So what's nice about this is that the crucial thing that you're using is the virtuality. And so now, if you imagine going to lower and lower subenergies here, that looks just like a virtuality-ordered parton shower. And in fact, it is. So let's take that a little more seriously. So let's look at the emission in the chamber between 1 and 2 on the side of 1, which is the thing that I was just telling you about. So as I said, that corresponds to emission from an antenna in the sense of the Vinciot group. So then you can imagine going through and making a parton shower at each stage. You would choose an antenna randomly. You would choose a side randomly. And then your integration region is determined by these inequalities that I wrote down. The correspondence to Alteroy-Parisi is pretty simple. 1 minus z is this factor, which depends on the xi variables. The xi variables are peaking, so they're small, so you get an enhancement in the softened collinear region. That's what you expect. These logarithmic integrals over xi then become these integrals dq squared over q squared dz over z times 1 minus z. So this has not all, but most of the structure of the Alteroy-Parisi splitting functions. Okay. So then the other thing we choose randomly is the value of the gluon helicity. So it's very useful here to, because we're going to use amplitudes that are for definite helicity emissions, we'll also, whenever we create a gluon, we'll randomly choose what its helicity has to be. And so then, well, basically, here are the formulae for the gluon splitting functions for polarized gluons. And what you see is that this factor of z times 1 minus z is actually captured by the integration we're doing. And it's only the numerator factor, which appears in some cases, that has to then be put on top of this. So the strategy that we're using is, let's take this formula for integrating over an emission. For that formula, you can totally flatten it. So you can exactly solve for, choosing three random numbers, the coordinate xi1, xi2, and phi at which you're generating it. Then you would check whether the inequalities are satisfied. If they're not, you assign that weight 0. You can include these two factors for those two helicities by including those in the weight. And then roughly, I'll say a little more about this on the next slide, you choose a random number, and if the weight, which should be between 0 and 1, that's true here, but it's not going to be true in a moment, is less than 1, then you would accept the event if the weight is greater than your random number. Okay, so now we're in business. Now there's a Parkhan-Schauer algorithm. Now we come to the third point. Actually, it's subtle to do hit or miss in a Parkhan-Schauer, because if you do hit or miss and you have a rejection, that's for one stage of the Parkhan-Schauer. But now what you'd like to do is that you'd like to, in a Parkhan-Schauer, generate n gluons and then have some stopping criterion. So it's absolutely incorrect for the miss to be the stopping criterion. Then you would generate many too few Parkhan. And so then you have to think about that a little more carefully. And here I'm not sure we've found the best solution. The solution I'll show you is okay. And if you folks have suggestions for improving it, I would appreciate hearing them, frankly. So let's abstract this. And maybe I should say, you can't do without some kind of hit or miss selection, because these inequalities mean that some points have to have weight 0. So those points you have to be able to omit. But at the same time, picking one of those points should not be the criterion for stopping the Parkhan-Schauer. So let's write the emission probability schematically in one variable like this. You should think of x as s over q squared, so roughly the virtuality coordinate in which you're evolving the shower. And so ordinarily, you think of an emission probability like this, but really what you're interested in is, if I go from x to a higher value of x, where is the first emission? So the probability for that has this exponential decay, because you might have already had an emission upstream. And S is called the Sudikoff factor, and it's given by that. So you'd like to choose probabilities with this kind of weight. Now, if you understand some part of F, so if you write F equals F0 times W, and you understand F0 perfectly, that's not good enough, because W appears in here at variables of x that are upstream from where you might want to have an emission. So what you actually have to do, I think, is to model S of x. So you imagine that in the preparation stage for your Monte Carlo, you collect some data, you make a model for S of X, and then you try and do this better. And so here's a, well, maybe oversimplified way to do this. Let's model S of X by multiplying the zeroth order Sudikoff by a polynomial. We'll choose a different polynomial at each stage of the iteration, that is for the first, second, third, fourth branch, and also for what helicity choice we make there. And then because those are a lot of parameters, we'll choose a very simple form of the polynomial, just a plus bx. And maybe I should say we have not gotten far enough along to really test what happens if you go to higher order and is it stable. I apologize, we're not there yet. But in any case, you can go through, collect data that allows you to compute A and B, and then use that to basically modify the emission probability, what would be the emission probability from upstream. Then the zeroth order events, once you included these factors, are now chosen according to a probability like this that differs from F0. So you'd better take that into account when you think about what the weight is. Now if you had small weights, you generate a small a. Now this thing is going to be greater than one somewhere, so you're in trouble. So what you have to do is to find an integer such that this quantity is always less than that integer. Use this formula for hit or miss with the integer there. If you don't find something, you go back and you try again. You try n times, and if you don't find it by n times, then you terminate the Parton shower and you don't generate any more emissions after that point. So assuming that this model actually does model the Sudikoff, which as I say, really remains to be seen, this is a consistent algorithm that would generate a Parton shower according to the formula that I showed you before. For the calculation we've done, we're very lucky, n kind of has a minimum value of 2, and then if you generate typically m partons, this thing would slow you down by a factor of 2 to the m, so I don't know, 30 or something like that. But Parton showers are very fast, so you can pay that price, and we'll see that as we proceed. Okay, so for a simple Parton shower, we would choose the weight that we begin with to just be the numerator of the splitting functions, and written in terms of our coordinates, they're things like this. So they're things that are usually pretty close to one, except here there's a suppression in the soft region. That's fine. They just don't have to be large. But we could also imagine reweighting a shower according to exact matrix elements. And the way you do that is that you take into account that our phase space already includes the QCD denominator. So you ask BCF for the exact matrix element. You multiply by the QCD denominator. That's a weight. For Higgs to N gluons, those weights turn out to grow exponentially with the level. But what you would do is that at each level, you'd apply the ratio of these factors, the factor for the current level divided by the factor for the previous level. And then those are things that are pretty simple. I mean, they're basically of order a half. And so then to get an n, which is of order 2, is actually quite reasonable. I should say that for Higgs to 3 gluons, the simple shower, this prescription, actually agrees with this one. So the simple shower is completely exact up through the Higgs to 3 gluons, and then it becomes non-exact when you go on. And in fact, it's never so bad, as you'll see. Okay, so now I have to offer a grain of salt. Those of you who have been here for a few days have noticed that during the lectures I've been sitting in the back of the room furiously debugging this program. And so I make no guarantees for its accuracy. But let me show you some results anyway. So here's the number of gluons, 2, 3, 4, et cetera, typically something like 5 or 6 gluons in evolving from a TEV to a GEV. That number seems low to me. I apologize. I'll find the bug sooner or later. Anyway, with this distribution, one can then compute the thrust distribution. So what I have here are the following curves. curves are just the lowest order thrust distribution, Higgs to three gluons. They're just to guide the eye. That distribution necessarily cuts off at 1 minus thrust of a third, but of course you have a real parton shower, you'll generate events out past that. The red here is the simple shower. The dark red is the shower with exact matrix element at leading color ordered matrix element, so leading color, up to Higgs to six gluons. The speed is 50 seconds per million events for the light red and 100 seconds per million events for the dark red. So, yeah, I mean, if you could really achieve that in a correct program, which I don't guarantee this is, you could carry it around, and that's on this box. So you could carry that around with you and make estimates and go in and play with the code and do all kinds of things that you can't do if you have to send something to a farm and wait hours. Here is an interesting curve. So I take the results of that program, I cluster it in the E plus E minus way with this Y cut variable. So I'm going to add partons until the mass of a cluster is a certain number. And the number I've chosen here is 10 GeV. So then these are the energies of the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth highest energy clusters. And once again, the light is the simple shower, and the dark is the shower with improvement using the Higgs to six gluon, up to the Higgs to six gluon matrix element. So you see there are some systematic shifts, in particular, a harder emission, as you see here, for the softest clusters in the event. And the claim is, and once again, I apologize to you that it's a very preliminary claim, that this is actually now being done more or less correctly in accordance with leading order QCD. So, well, you know, please excuse the preliminary nature, but if this were actually right, it would be interesting. So the conclusions, this is a proof of principle for a new way to incorporate exact matrix elements into a parton shower. I should say the method does generalize to initial state radiation. If anyone's interested, I can tell you how I think that's going to work. There's no code yet, unfortunately. The generalization to processes with massive particles emitted, like W's and top quarks, is non-trivial because the Sarge algorithm is really optimized for purely massive, massless emissions. But hopefully I can find a graduate student who's interested in that problem and we'll work it out. And so I think there's some promise here that this might be an interesting tool for modeling multi-jet QCD, at least to try to build intuition for how we're going to look at these questions in relation to the LHC data. So, thank you very much. Please.
So maybe I misunderstood, but so what was the issue with modeling the Surikov? So is it that you don't have the exact splitting function, and
well,
are you trying to veto on getting the precise Altieri Parisi?
I think there are two issues. The first one is that when we define phase space with a veto. So there are definitely some points that we're generating that we then say those points are illegitimate. We have to assign them weight zero. So that means that anything that analytically that you write for the Surikov is not going to be right because it doesn't take into account that feature.
I mean,
then eventually, when you use exact matrix elements, those are quite complicated. They depend on the whole cascade. And again, if you implement that by hit or miss, then there are vetoes, and you have to be able to deal with that.
Because, I mean, the thing that I'm confused about, like, I mean, in Pythia, there is this algorithm, right, that they just have the same, the z limits that you have. So they generate a value of t, and then the z limits, they don't know exactly. So what they do, they integrate over a larger region, and then they veto on it. There's a well-defined procedure that, you know, Pythia does have an algorithm that just generates the right Surikov factor. And the idea is that if you veto, you start the shower at that value of t that you were vetoed. Does that not work here? So why is that? I mean, I'm saying there isn't algorithm that is in the Pythia manual that says how to generate these pseudocofactors numerically with that algorithm. So I'm trying to see where the difference is.
Ah. I'm sorry, I don't think I can give a precise answer to this question. Certainly the way we're doing it, the way we're doing it, there didn't seem to be a direct correspondence to that. Why that is, maybe we haven't thought about it hard enough.
I guess I'm a little confused about the precise region of validity for this kind of thing. Is this, if you wanted to know the question, let's say I have a heavy Higgs and it's decaying to jets, and I want to know what kind of substructure am I likely to find in that jet? Is this a tool which is actually accurate enough to tell you that, or is what's being kept?
So my claim is that, to the accuracy of a tree-level leading color QCD calculation, the nth jet will have a tail with the correct distribution. That's my claim. And for any n, as long as you apply these matrix elements.
I guess the nth gluon will have a tail, but now if you actually apply a jet algorithm to it.
That's a whole other issue. The nth gluon. Then, of course, you need some phenomenological hadronization, so you have to go down to 1 GeV, feed this to Pythia to get hadrons, do your jet algorithm.
I'm not so worried about that. I mean, going from, let's say, 50 GeV down to 1 GeV is less likely to add important substructure than going from 1 TeV down to 50.
Because
of the large separation of scale. Yeah. So I would have thought you could already learn something.
Right.
About
so I think if that's your question, the events with five jets that are all in the hard region, you still have to do this. Depending on your jet algorithm, some of these partons may be clustered together into a single jet. But at the parton level, the nth parton in this algorithm will have the correct shape according to leading color tree order, leading color tree level QCD. It's done. That's the last slide.